Book of Exodus, chapter 3. Read the first 5 verses. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will go now, turn aside, and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the bush, out of the midst of the bush, and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. He said, Draw not nigh hither. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place wherein thou standest is holy ground. In verse 1, we see Moses in the backside of the desert in Midian, keeping the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law. This time, Israel, of course, was suffering as the result of Egyptian bondage. God, of course, had a very important work for Moses to do. And for this work, Moses must be prepared. The work, of course, was to lead Israel out of Egyptian bondage. And Moses, in spite of a thorough education in Pharaoh's court, we read in Acts 7 and verse 22, and Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, which of course would have been the wisdom of the world. And we see also he was a very impressive individual. Again, in Acts 7 verse 22, and was mighty in words and deeds. But in spite of his education, in spite of his impressiveness, these things did not equip him for the work that God would have him to do. What we read in our text is part of God's preparation of Moses. Again, our text opens with Moses tending to the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law. So he's shepherding sheep. This, of course, is part of his preparation. It also says that he was in the backside of the desert. That is, he was away from the bustle and confusion and the influence and the ambitions and the pursuits of Egypt. This, too, was part of God preparing Moses. Here in the backside of the desert, Moses would learn dependence upon God. There's no one else to depend on in the backside of the desert. Not only on the backside of the desert, but more specifically, it says that he came to the mountain of God, even Horeb. Horeb, of course, is the name of the mountain range. The mountain of God refers to Sinai, a particular peak in that range. And we know all about Sinai, of course, but throughout the Old Testament, Sinai is the place of God's glory. It is the place of God's calling. It is also the place of communion with God. It is a place of revelation, a place of sanctification. It is a place of peace. It is a place of power. So as Moses is leading the flock in this area, something miraculous occurs in verse 2. And what occurs would ultimately prepare him for the work that God would have him to do. The fact is stated that the angel of the Lord appeared unto him. Now, I believe that the angel of the Lord is none other than Jesus Christ. He is referred to in verse 4 has Lord and God. And in verse 14, he is referred to as the I am that I am and the I am. So we are told of how this appearance came about. The angel of the Lord, Christ himself, appears to Moses. And we see how it came about. In a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush. The Hebrew word there is a thorny bush. And there's lessons there as well we're not going to go into. But this bush is on fire. And it, of course, got the attention of Moses. It says there in verse 2 that he looked. Moses looked. So it's gotten the attention of Moses. And what Moses saw was something that was absolutely amazing. He saw a real wonder. The bush burned with fire, and the wonder of it is this, and the bush was not consumed. And the bush was not consumed. There's the miracle. Moses saw a bush in flames, but the bush was not consumed. Moses saw fire engulfing this bush, yet the bush is not destroyed. Moses sees the destroying power of fire upon this bush, yet the bush is not devoured. So in verse 3, Moses draws a little closer. The purpose of doing so, we are told, to see why the bush is not burnt. He wanted to see why is this bush not consumed. And we read in verse 4 that as he's drawing closer to the bush, that God called him out of the midst of the bush. And here's the reason why the bush was not consumed. God was in the midst of the bush. That's the reason that the bush is not consumed, because God, of course, cannot be consumed. And out of the midst of the bush, God said, "Moses, Moses." So you imagine Moses as he approaches this bush, and then out of the midst of the bush, the all-powerful voice of the Lord calling you by name. This, of course, would have a tremendous impact upon Moses. We see the response of Moses in verse 4. And he said, "Here am I." Very simple, very short response. A response of submissiveness. A response of being ready to obey whatever God had for him. Moses is then instructed in verse 5 not to draw any closer and to put off his shoes from off his feet. That is, he was to remove the shoes of everyday walk and life. The reason? For the place where thou standest is holy ground. That is, this is a sacred place. This is a set apart place. So Moses was in a place where there is absolutely no room for levity. He is in a place where there is absolutely no room for lightheartedness. He is standing upon holy ground, sacred ground. And it was here that God called Moses to do what he would have him to do. And what Moses saw and what Moses experienced that day would alter his life. It not only would alter his life, it would control his life. What Moses saw and experienced that day would have a lasting, lifelong impression upon him. It was something that Moses would never forget. In fact, he mentioned it at the very end of his life. Notice in Deuteronomy chapter 33, in verse 16, Moses is dying. And we see here in Deuteronomy 33, in verse 16, that he makes mention of the bush. And for the precious things of the earth and fullness thereof, and for the good will of him that dwelt in the bush. So here it is, Moses in his last days, and he still remembered that bush. And he still remembered that it was God that was in the midst of that bush. The revelation of God in the burning bush was not just given to startle Moses, not just given to astonish Moses. It was given to teach him very, very vital lessons that would motivate and sustain him throughout the work that God called him to do. So we can say that the burning bush was there for Moses. It was there for Moses. Now, the burning bush has an emblem, instructs. As a miracle, it astonishes, it attracts, and it demands reverence. The burning bush is an amazing revelation. And it abounds in lessons which man cannot possibly exhaust. I do not believe that we can fully comprehend everything about the burning bush. Nor can we fully comprehend what took place that day at that burning bush. But we see that, again, the lessons are many. And when God chose to use what appeared to be an ordinary, insignificant bush. He didn't choose the oak. He chose a bush. And God was in the midst of that thorny bush. But no matter how you view the burning bush that was not consumed, it speaks of victory. And Moses went from that burning bush encouraged. Moses went from that burning bush filled with confidence in the faithfulness and in the power of the Lord. This unconsumed bush can be viewed as a promise to Moses that though Israel was in the fiery furnace of affliction, they would not be consumed. Why? Because God was in the midst of them. Some have used the burning bush as a type of the gospel, as a type of the message of God, that it will never be consumed. But we want tonight to view it as a representation of Jesus Christ. He who is the wonder of wonders, I believe, is the wonder of the burning bush. He's the reason that it was not consumed. And just as Moses was in a holy place, and just as Moses was in a place of a glory, a place of communion with God, a place of revelation, a place of instruction, a place of encouragement, a place of confidence, a place of assurance, a place of peace and a place of power, we want to go to such a place tonight, a place called Gethsemane. And I believe in Gethsemane, we see once again the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. The subject tonight is the burning bush and Gethsemane. Now again, I believe that there is a degree of mystery concerning the burning bush. I do not believe that we can fully comprehend the magnitude of what happened at the burning bush. And such is certainly true of Gethsemane. So let's turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 26. Matthew, chapter 26, verses 36 through verse 46. Then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, Sit ye here, while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, which would be James and John, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, Peter, James, and John, My soul is exceeding sorrowful even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. And he cometh unto the disciples, Peter, James, and John, and findeth them asleep, and saith unto Peter, What, could ye not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation, which gives those very words, watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation, gives us picture of the atmosphere of Gethsemane. The enemy was present. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again the second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me except I drink it, thy will be done. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. And he left them and went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now, and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray me. In verse 36, the opening word, then. That, of course, is indicative of the fact that there were other events leading up to what is about to be said. So it would do us good to just briefly look at those events. Jesus had met in the upper room with his 12 apostles. And in that upper room with the 12 apostles, he observed the Passover meal. During the Passover meal, John chapter 13, Jesus washes the feet of the apostles. And he also warned them that one of them would betray him that very night. And Jesus would reveal Judas as the betrayer. Judas would then leave the upper room. And at that time, Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper with the 11 in Matthew 26, verses 26 through 29. Following the Lord's Supper, Jesus gives his farewell discourse to the 11. We see that in John chapter 14. Following the discourse, notice if keep a mark there in Matthew 26 and turn to John 14. Following the discourse in John 14, in verse 31, notice the last phrase, Arise, let us go hence. Arise, let us go hence. So they sang a hymn, Matthew 26, verse 30. And then Jesus said, Arise, let us go hence. So they've now left the upper room. And they are on their way to the Mount of Olives. And Jesus at this time speaks of what is recorded in John 15 and John 16. Now I believe as they left that upper room that there was probably a vineyard, and that's when Jesus said, I am the vine, you're the branches. But he spoke in John 15, 16. That's not taking place in the upper room. They've left the upper room. And they're now headed to the Mount of Olives. And then he prays what is recorded in John chapter 17. And then this is where our text picks up. Then, following the prayer of John 17, then cometh Jesus with them, the 11. Judas has already gone out. Judas is already gathering the ones that would arrest Jesus Christ. Then cometh Jesus with them, the 11, into a place called Gethsemane. John, in his account, John 18 and verse 1 says, he went forth with the apostles over the brook Kidron, where was a garden, into the which he entered and his disciples. So Gethsemane is a garden. It is the garden of Gethsemane. Jesus said in Matthew 26 and verse 36 to his apostles, the 11, sit ye here while I go yonder and pray. One of the reasons for coming to this garden was to pray. Jesus also knew this would be the place where he would be arrested. But one of the reasons he came here was to pray. We learn from Luke's account in Luke 22 and verse 39, and also from John's account in John 18 and verse 2, that Jesus often came to this place, this Garden of Gethsemane. And no doubt he often came there to pray. And Judas knew that Jesus often went to this place. So after saying, sit ye here while I go yonder and pray, we read in Matthew 26 and verse 37 that he took with him Peter, James, and John. They would go a little further into the garden. And like Moses at the burning bush, as we approach Gethsemane, this is holy ground. This is sacred ground. And we ought to approach Gethsemane with great reverence. We ought to approach Gethsemane with great awe. There's no place for levity in Gethsemane. There's no place for jokes as you approach Gethsemane. And as you, just as it was with the burning bush, this is a place of great wonder. This is a place of great amazement. Again, this is holy ground. And just as what happened at the burning bush had a lasting impact upon Moses and motivated and inspired Moses in the service of God, Gethsemane should have a lasting impact upon us. It should serve as a motivation and an inspiration in our service to God. And just as it was at the burning bush, Gethsemane, what happened there is beyond human comprehension. No one can fully enter into that burning bush. And no one can fully enter into Gethsemane, what happened at Gethsemane. We all have seen paintings of Jesus praying in Gethsemane. And there is no painting that can aptly portray what took place at Gethsemane. There are no words that can aptly portray what took place at Gethsemane. Just as there is no painting that can aptly portray what took place at the burning bush, and just as there are no words that can aptly portray what took place at the burning bush, so it is with Gethsemane. Again, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. This is illustrated in Gethsemane. And just as that bush was there for Moses, Jesus is in Gethsemane for me. He is in Gethsemane as our substitute. In Gethsemane, Jesus endured a grief and a suffering unknown to any previous period of his life. As he was walking in the Garden of Gethsemane with Peter, James, and John, we read in verse 37, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Jesus began to be sorrowful. He has been in Gethsemane before, but now he is sorrowful. Something takes place that had not taken place before. He began to be sorrowful. That means he began to be deeply grieved. This is beyond comprehension. Jesus, the Son of God, Jesus, God Himself, becomes deeply grieved. That's a mystery. It is a sorrow that goes to the innermost parts of one's being. It speaks of an affliction and anguish of soul and spirit. It says also that he began to be heavy. That means he began to be painfully troubled. Jesus, the Son of God, began to be painfully troubled. It means painfully distressed, tormented, and tortured. Again, this is not physical pain. This is inward pain, inward distress, inward torment of heart and mind that has come upon Jesus Christ. And as he's walking with Peter, James, and John, we read in Mark's account in Mark 14 and verse 33, that he began to be sore amazed. That is, he began to be painfully amazed. And the word amazed conveys the idea of, again, of terror. Terror that makes the flesh tremble. Again, we're talking about Jesus, the Son of God. This is something we cannot fully enter into. Feeling this sorrow, feeling this torment, and this trembling, he said to Peter, James, and John in Matthew 26 and verse 38, "My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death." So we read in Matthew 26, verse 37, that he began to be sorrowful and very heavy. And then he relayed this to Peter, James, and John by saying, "My soul." He's not talking about his foot. He's not talking about his arm. He's not talking about physical pain. He says, "My soul is exceeding sorrowful." My soul
is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. That is, affliction, anguish, grief, and torment was engulfing Jesus Christ. It was above him, it was beneath him, it was behind him, it was in front of him, it was on either side of him. In other words, the bush was burning. The bush was burning. He was so engulfed with this that he said, even unto death. The sorrows, the anguish, the affliction, the torment, the grief, the torture that he was now feeling was so great. He is saying, I feel like I'm going to die. He's in the Garden of Gethsemane, on his way to be arrested, on his way to the cross. And he says, I feel like I am so tormented. I am so tortured at this moment that I could die. The omnipotent Son of God, so inwardly pained that he was near death. And I believe he was in Gethsemane. I believe he came very close to death in Gethsemane. What would have happened had Jesus died in Gethsemane? He would have never gone to the cross. Never would have gone to the cross. Again, the bush was burning. And while in this agony, he instructed Peter, James, and John to pray. We read in Luke 22 and verse 41 that he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast. In other words, not very far. And he kneeled down in this torment, exceeding sorrowful. He kneeled down and prayed. Mark records in Mark 14, verse 35, he went a little further and fell on the ground and prayed. Engulfed with sorrow. Engulfed with anguish and affliction and torment and torture. He prayed. And here's what he prayed. Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou will. He prayed this prayer three times. Matthew 26, verse 39, let this cup pass from me. Verse 42, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me. And then in verse 44, he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Three times, let this cup pass from me. Now, most commentators and most people who preach on Gethsemane have the cup referring to the cross. I believe that's blasphemy. Jesus, this cup refers to what Jesus was experiencing at that moment. What Jesus was experiencing in Gethsemane. Jesus was not looking to avoid the cross. Jesus never, ever drew back from the cross. Never. He spake of his hour. It was something that he looked forward to. And that doesn't change here. Luke tells us in his account, in Luke 22 and 44, that he prayed. Again, he's praying, let this cup pass from me. And he prayed in agony, intense pain of mind, in a struggle for his life. He prayed. It says that he prayed earnestly, intently, and fervently. And Luke says that his sweat was as it were great drops of blood falling to the ground. It does not say that Jesus sweat blood. That's not what it says. It says that he sweat as it were great drops of blood falling to the ground. And that speaks again of the inward anguish of his soul. It speaks of the fervency in which Jesus was praying. And as you look at Gethsemane, what you see is the bush was burning. The bush was burning. But notice in Matthew 26, verse 45 and 46, then he's prayed three times. Let this cup pass from me. The object of his prayer is that cup. That cup. And then after praying three times, verse 45, then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed in the hands of sinners. He's calm. He's at peace. Rise, let us be going. Where was he going? He was going to be arrested and eventually led to the cross. Let us be going. Behold, he is at hand. Judas is at hand that doth betray me. You see, the bush was burning. But I believe the time you get to verse 45 and 46, the cup had passed from him. The cup, what he was enduring in Gethsemane, had passed from him. This is victory. And what caused this great sorrow, what caused this great distress, what caused this struggle in Gethsemane, was what was in that cup. That was the cause. It was what was in that cup that caused Christ to struggle for his life. Now, I believe that the devil did everything he could in the Old Testament to keep Christ from being born. Did everything he could. When we get to the birth of Jesus Christ, the devil did everything he could to kill Jesus Christ. And how many times in the book of John we read they would have stoned him, but they could not, for the hour was not yet come. Satan did everything he could to kill Christ before he went to that cross. And now we come to Gethsemane, and the cross is just over yonder. It's very close. And I believe that the devil and all the powers of hell were unleashed against Christ in Gethsemane. The bush burned. The bush was burning, but it was not consumed. That's victory. I also believe that in that cup was the innumerable sins of an innumerable people. And these sins were now beginning to press down upon Jesus Christ. All the guilt and all the filth of those sins were pressing upon Christ, and he felt the weight of it all to the point of death. He was beginning to feel what it was like to be the sin bearer. Again, the bush was burning, but the bush was not consumed. Jesus, just as that burning bush was there for Moses, this burning bush, Jesus Christ, is there for us. In Gethsemane, again the bush was burning, but it was not consumed. Jesus Christ in Gethsemane, just like that burning bush, is a revelation of the fullness and power of God. And such ought to fill us with reverence. Such ought to fill us with awe and wonder and amazement. Such ought to give us great encouragement and ought to comfort us greatly and ought to give us confidence and peace and power. But remember back in Exodus chapter 3, it was from the midst of the bush that Moses heard God. Now we go to Gethsemane. Christ is the burning bush. Can we hear God from that bush? Can you hear God in Gethsemane? From the midst of the bush, Moses heard a personal call to service. Christ is in Gethsemane. Christ is the burning bush in Gethsemane. Can we hear God calling us personally from that bush? From that bush. Jesus Christ in Gethsemane. Moses surrendered at the burning bush. All he could say was, "Here am I. Here am I." Can we hear the Lord calling us from the burning bush of Gethsemane? And will we surrender before such a bush? The bush was burning, but it was not consumed. We see what happened again at the cross. Then we see the resurrection. The bush was burning, but it was not consumed. That ought to have a great impact upon our lives. It ought to motivate us to service. Jesus Christ, our bush, engulfed with the flames, yet he was not consumed. And because he was victorious, you and I have victory in him. So we can walk away from the burning bush, and it's something that ought to impact us the rest of our lives. What transpired in Gethsemane. Gethsemane is holy ground. We need to enter Gethsemane very, very carefully, because much blasphemy has been taught from Gethsemane. It's holy ground. It's no place for levity. It's no place for lightheartedness. But if we listen, I believe we can hear the voice of God calling us from Gethsemane. And our response again ought to be, Here am I. Here am I. Brother Mark, if you'd come and lead us verse song.